a foundation that we have.
Okay, thank you. For Education Matters here on WGTD HD, I'm your host this week, Steve Brown, saying thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenny Aquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Hello and welcome to Community Matters for this week. I'm Jane Herring, your host. And today we're going to be talking about the Kenosha Literacy Council. Been a big part of our community's success for quite a while, but so often we think we know about the organization, and it really helps to do a deep dive and figure out exactly what the contributions are to the community and who benefits from that. So today we have three guests who will be helping us understand that. Cheryl Hernandez, who is the executive director, Cassie Christensen, who is the program coordinator, and Brandy Cummings, who is a communication specialist with the Kenosha Public Library and on the board of directors of the Literacy Council. And in the interest of full disclosure, I'm a brand new member of the Literacy Council board, and I mean brand new. And so I see this as an opportunity for me to learn more as well. So I thank our listeners for listening into my board orientation. So, yeah, let's talk about the overall mission, literacy, right? But what does that really mean?
So the Kenosha Literacy Council is a nonprofit organization in Kenosha. We've been around since 1965, and we work to provide and promote literacy education in English to adults in Kenosha County. And we do that with the assistance of trained volunteer tutors. And we see firsthand how adult literacy is a factor in almost every issue that our community faces. So parenting, healthcare, workforce development, poverty, literacy really touches on all of that. And if we want to solve those issues, we need to improve literacy. And so we work every day to kind of create a foundation for lifelong learning with our students.
That's a great overview that really helps kind of position where you're at with that. And I think, a lot of communities seem to have a literacy council. Is it a national umbrella organization, or is it just something that sprouts up in each community?
Yeah, it's something that just sprouts up in each community. So we're all individual organizations, all individual nonprofit organizations. There is a statewide organization called Wisconsin Literacy that kind of supports member organizations. So you can choose to be a member of that Wisconsin Literacy organization. And there's also an international organization called Pro Literacy that literacy providers can choose to be a part of.
And I suppose when you say support, you get some studies. Mm-hmm. It's not really
exactly
financial support as much as it's information and training.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. So a day in the life of the Kenosha Literacy Council might be helpful. And I know that Cassie is the program director and you're the executive director. What does that really mean?
So as far as our roles go, I think it means that, I get to do money and paperwork and and being a representative for the Literacy Council in the community. And Cassie is really kind of doing the interaction with the students and volunteers. So she, day-to-day, is the one that most closely impacts the students and the volunteers.
So it's morning. You've arrived at the Kenosha Literacy Council. What happens? Do you have a lot of organized classes every day? Are there walk-ins? What happens?
Yeah, we have lots of different programs that the learners can be involved in. So some days we have multiple appointments where I'm registering new students. And during that registration process, the students are explaining to me what their goals are, what their learning goals are, and we help them break that down into smaller goals because often it's, I want to learn English or I want to get my GED. We have to work with them to make sure we can accomplish short-term goals that are ever-changing. Once they accomplish those short-term goals, to work towards their big goal. So those registration appointments are happening at least 2 or 3 times a day. The students choose programs to be involved in based on those goals. So we have tutoring program where they can work at their own pace with a volunteer. And then we also have our civics class where students are learning English, but they're also learning about the community. So they're learning how to navigate the public school system to communicate with their child's teachers. They're learning about the library system, the banking and finances in Kenosha, also healthcare. So many students have a main goal of being able to talk to their doctor in English without using a translator. Housing and then local government as well. So they're learning about all of those things in the community while they're also learning English. So that class happens
Wow.
3 days, 3 times a week. And then we have other classes that are specifically targeted at specific goals, such as our citizenship class. So students who are looking to go through the naturalization process would take that 8-week course that is also taught by a volunteer teacher. So a lot of our classes are taught by volunteer instructors. So
I would imagine those initial meetings when you're bringing somebody in and trying to really pull out what the main goals are for that person, I mean, that's so vital. For one thing, they're probably not speaking English with you. How do you accomplish that?
Yeah. One thing that I definitely practice is using body language. I know that my body is pretty much my greatest teaching tool. And if I can't express something with body language, then I use a lot of pictures. So right from the get-go, we're making sure that we're using English with all of our learners so that they know that that's kind of the expectation at the Literacy Council, that they're going to come here and really be immersed in the language.
One of the things that really has touched me when I hear as a value of the Literacy Council is those parents who, you know, their kids might be learning English and they're in school, but they really want to help their child be successful and they want to be part of that learning process, and they feel so cut off from that because they are unable to speak English or to read. Do you get a lot of people coming in with that particular need?
Definitely. Those parents that are coming in to the Literacy Council are just like any other parent. So they have the same dreams of helping their children succeed in life. And so any way that we can help them be better able to do that by learning the language is our main goal. So.
Yeah, that's bad enough being a parent of a teenager and speaking English. Can you imagine?
Yeah. It was really exciting. We were visiting one of our civics classes, and just last week a mother expressed to us that it was the first time that she had done her parent-teacher conference in English this year. So it was a very exciting moment for us, and we're excited to celebrate it with her.
You had mentioned some of the community partners with the civics class, and I know, Brandy, you represent one of those partners, the library. Can you talk about the interaction a little bit?
Absolutely. So Kenosha Public Library is so proud to host the Literacy Council in our Uptown branch. We actually share the building together in the Uptown neighborhood. And it's this wonderful partnership where we're meeting the needs of the community around us and bringing new people into the library space as the students go down and learners engage with the Literacy Council. The civics class actually takes a tour of one of our other branches, and they walk through with staff, talk about how the library works, how you get a library card, the different things we can offer them, because, you know, your public library is so much more than just books now, so there's a lot to catch up on every time someone new comes in. So it's always really exciting when those trips and those events are happening here with us, getting to answer questions and meet new people. And introduce them to the wonders of the public library.
Finding those resources. But that's it. There's so much I think all of us take for granted. Yeah, but, you know, my husband and I talk, we didn't know each other when we were young, but we both ended up going to the same library all of our life in the Milwaukee area. And, you know, those memories, those story hours, all of that. But people coming into our community and coming from another country who don't speak English they just don't see the library as something they can use. So I can imagine that's got to be a huge door to open.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the greatest things that we do. So we're not just teaching them English, but we're really teaching them how to be active participants in the community. And so, you know, they come from, our students represented 40 different countries last year. And so those, they're the backgrounds that they come from, you know, the way things work in those countries are oftentimes very different than in the United States. And so we're really helping them learn about our community and how they can be a part of that community. And so for a lot of them, a library is not a public place. It's not something you would go to unless you were studying or you were in a university. And we all know that our library here in Kenosha is very different, right? It's very open to the community, lots of great programming, especially, you know, for families, and lots of great free opportunities. And so we want the students to feel welcome and comfortable going into the libraries and utilizing those resources. And it's the same with healthcare and the same with banking. Those systems are a lot of times different than in their countries than they are here. And so we want to introduce them to how things work in our country so that they feel confident in taking care of their everyday needs.
You mentioned both healthcare and banking. Do you bring in people from those industries to work with them in those classes?
Absolutely, and I'll let Cassie tell you a little bit about it. But the civics class is really great because it's based on experiential learning. So they have lots of guest speakers come in, but they also go on lots of kind of community trips and experiences. And so maybe Cassie can share a little bit about some of that.
And to pull out just the healthcare specifically, during a healthcare unit, we will usually visit a pharmacy and practice shopping for medicine. If you've been to stores in other countries, you'll realize that our pharmacy is quite a bit different. And that idea that you can ask a pharmacist for help with just things that are with over-the-counter medicines that you can just go in and buy is something that our learners don't necessarily know they can do. We also tour a hospital so that they can learn how to read the signs in the hospital and navigate that place in the community.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Follow the line.
Yep, exactly. And one of the things I think is kind of interesting is when we go to a bank, the bankers, the people at the bank really go out of their way to make sure that the learners understand what to do when they come in, who the different people are in the bank. And then one of the things that is most interesting is using the drive-thru. the learners often don't use the drive-thru, and I think that kind of goes back to that body language thing. So when you're talking to someone over the phone or through a speaker, you can't see their body, and so it's a really challenging thing for someone to do.
I would think. The entire thing with, I guess, reading, learning to read and learning English, the night I had come in for my board orientation, I was really struck by the woman who not only did not know English and was trying to learn English, but in her previous country, she was not offered the privilege of learning to read in her native language. So talking about being at a fairly advanced age and having nothing to go by, no comparison, how are you folks trained, frankly, to get them to a point of success?
The curriculum that we use is the Laubach way to reading and writing, and it was designed specifically for that. It really focuses on basic reading below a fifth grade level. And so learners coming in that aren't educated in their own language can still be successful with that curriculum. And all of our volunteers are trained to work with individuals with those challenges. So it works out pretty well, and the students really grow fast.
We'll come back to talking about more details and successes and that kind of thing, but I think you've mentioned, I've asked you as staff people some questions. There are two of you who are staff people doing a whole lot of stuff. And you've mentioned the word volunteers any number of times. So let's turn to volunteerism and funding. So the funding for the organization is really covering both of your salaries, and that's it, correct? You know, as far as human resources.
Yeah, so we're a nonprofit organization, so all of our funding comes from grants and community donations. So we don't, you know, like a typical public school might get tax dollars. We don't get that. We're our own independent nonprofit organization, which sometimes people in the community don't understand. So we definitely are very reliant on the generosity of people in the community to donate and give to us. We also do fundraisers throughout the year, and we write for grants and things like that. And so then, right, all of that money goes directly into our programming. So it's salaries for staff and
two.
Yes. We also have a very part-time instructor.
Okay,
so.
All right.
Two and a quarter.
Yeah.
Two and a quarter. All right, got it.
And then, you know, learning materials for the sure. students and all of the supplies that we need to do the services that we do.
So all of these classes that you were describing, and even some of the intake, a lot of that is done by volunteers. Tell me about you know, how many volunteers work with
Absolutely.
You. And
so we have about 200 volunteers that we use throughout the course of the year. They're all trained, as Cassie mentioned, to use the curriculums that we use. Most of them work in our drop-in tutoring program, so they're working one-on-one with students or in small groups. But we also have some volunteers that are specially trained to lead small group classes. So we have conversation classes and a book club and citizenship classes. So the volunteers that participate in those get some specialized training for that.
Okay. Do you have what's the longevity? Do you have a lot of turnover? Is it a combination?
Yeah, it definitely is a combination. We have volunteers that have been with us for 20 years, which is amazing and wonderful. So they've been with us longer than the staff have been around.
Wow.
But we also have volunteers that just come in. Maybe they need some field experience hours for a class that they're in college, or maybe they have, you know, they're a high school student and they have some time and they're trying to get some service hours. And so, you know, we have a little of everything. Some folks who are with us for a long time and some who are just with us for a short time. But everyone, I think, finds it to be a very rewarding experience, and they learn a lot from being a volunteer as well. They go into it thinking, right, I'm gonna be able to share my skills and teach somebody else something, which they certainly do, but I think they get a lot out of the experience as well.
I do want to talk more about the volunteer tutors and really how they interact with the students, how they get going, how big of a group, that sort of thing. But before we move away from funding and those major areas, you mentioned fundraisers, and I do know one is coming up, and that's your annual spelling bee, which is both a fundraiser and it's really a cool event, and it links very well to literacy in the community. I know there are a lot of people like us who have made our living in writing and get very frightened about the idea of having to spell in front of people. So I always give the team members credit for getting up there, but let's talk about this spelling bee. Give me some details when it's coming up.
Absolutely. So,
Brandy.
We are in our 20th year of our annual corporate spelling bee, which means that it's for adults, which I think some people who maybe haven't attended the program before or aren't used to it don't realize that this is an adult spelling bee. So you are strictly up there with your peers, having a wonderful time. This year we are at the Stella. Mm-hmm. We're actually the first public event in that space, which is
that
really
gorgeous.
Yes, it's going to be so exciting. So, of course, we're going with a Great Gatsby theme. So 20th year, being in the Stella, Great Gatsby, it all lines up really well. And we're just really excited for the turnout this year. We think it's going to be great. Tickets are $50 each, or you can reserve a table if you want to sit together with a group. That's available, too. It's a great night to come and cheer people on and just be really involved in the community. So we have wonderful teams from throughout the community. We see all different companies interacting and playing along with us here. And I do know that my first spelling bee was actually before I was on the board. I went to support the library's team, and I was surprised at just how rowdy it gets at the spelling bee. Like, there's cheering, and there's, like, table toys, and, like, people in costume and signs, and it's just a wonderful time to really come out and have a good time with the people in the community, but really support such a vital community organization. All the proceeds from that night go back to all the important work that the Literacy Council is doing.
And this is kind of the major fundraiser now, correct?
Yes.
You've kind of altered some of your approaches toward fundraising.
Yep, this is our main fundraiser for the year. So we're really hoping to make it be a successful night. And as Brandy said, you know, sometimes when you say, oh, come to a spelling bee, people are like, what are you doing?
We
make sure you have fun. We promise you're going to have fun.
So much fun.
The most fun you'll ever have at a spelling bee.
There's a lot of smack talk between the teams,
there is
too.
Yeah. Which I take it very, very seriously. They
side bets.
In a fun way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Some of them study for a good considerable time before the spelling bee, so they really have a lot invested in doing well, and they take it seriously. But the people in the audience really have a lot of fun with it too. And we really incorporate the theme, so we encourage people to come. This year the theme's Great Gatsby, so come in your favorite 1920s gear. And we're really going to have a great time with it. We're excited to be at the Stella.
Oh, yes.
The food is going to be wonderful. There's going to be an open bar, or, you know, a cash bar, but... and we'll have a silent auction and some other fun things for people in the audience to do as well. So we're really looking forward to a fun night.
I know, I've been driving by the Stella thinking, well, at least I'll be one of the first ones in there to go to that event, you know. It's just
we get to make a little bit of history.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we're really excited because it allows us to bring in so many people. We have in the years past sold out. And so our goal is to be completely sold out before. So if you haven't gotten your ticket yet, I really suggest you visit the Literacy Council website, which is KenoshaLit.org. And if you want to jump to the spelling bee, you can throw in a /B, and it'll take you right there.
B as in B-E-E?
B-E-E.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're listening to WGTD-FM and Community Matters. We are talking about the Kenosha Literacy Council, and our guests have been Cheryl Hernandez, Cassie Christensen, and Brandy Cummings. And we've been talking about the funding of the organization, and that so much of the money really comes from donations and some of the grants that are written and come into the Literacy Council, and the amount of volunteerism. But let's talk a little bit now about accomplishments. We've talked about a couple of the warm stories. Let's continue with that and put some numbers to it, if you can.
Absolutely. So last year we served 515 adult learners, and they represented 40 different countries. So I always think people are very interested to know that our community is that diverse. About 80% of our students come to us to learn English as another language, so they're coming to our community from some other place in the world. And so I think, you know, it's really amazing that we get to be a part of that and help welcome them to our community, but also learn from them about their backgrounds and their, you know, countries that they came from. The other 20% of our students are American-born, English-speaking adults who just didn't have the opportunity to finish school. And I think for a lot of people, that's really surprising, right? We don't realize that people that are similar to us, that we would consider our peers, didn't have those same opportunities that we had and didn't learn to read and write in school. And I think it was when I started at the Literacy Council, the thing that surprised me most about the students that we serve is that just everyday American English-speaking folks just didn't have the opportunity to go to school. And they always, when they come to the Literacy Council, they take that opportunity so seriously, and they really are dedicated and want to work hard to learn to read. And once they do, they really are on fire and want to read everything they can get their hands on. So it's so exciting to kind of see that progression and see them learn that way.
I would imagine it takes a lot of guts to admit in this world that you didn't have that opportunity. You do hear of people who somehow or another try to navigate without explaining that they can't read. I mean, even like a lease agreement or something like that, that's so important, you don't know what you're signing. I guess, what kind of stories do you hear from them in terms of what's the turning point? What made them say, okay, enough, I'm going to come in and take care of this issue?
I think a lot of times it's parents, right? When they when they realize they want to be able to read to their children, or they want to be able to help their children with homework that they can't help with anymore, that's kind of a crossing point, like, oh, I need to do something about this. A lot of times we have grandparents come who say, I want to be able to read to my grandchildren, or I want to be able to, you know, write notes to them. A lot of times it has to do with work. So they are needing to go back to work. Maybe they had a really good steady job that supported their family, but, you know, for whatever reason, they don't have that job. And so now they have to try and find a job without education, without a GED. And so that's a very difficult thing to do. What are some of the other?
I think that wraps it up pretty good. A little warm, fuzzy story that came to my mind right away, it really stuck with me, was an elderly man, and he was going to be turning 80 that year, and he wanted to be able to read the greeting cards that he got for his birthday. So, you know,
that's
small
sweet.
Things like that can really impact somebody as well. So.
Oh, definitely. So you have volunteers, and you're getting a lot of people coming through, some as volunteers, some as those receiving the services. How do you go about matching the right people with the right people so that it's a successful outcome?
Yeah.
Everybody stares at Cassie.
That's really where our drop-in tutoring program comes into play. So all of our students and our volunteers go into the drop-in tutoring program, and that gives us an opportunity to learn about both the students and the volunteers. Everybody has strengths in different areas, and we want to learn about those strengths. And students also have different needs, right? So they maybe need to work with different types of personalities, or they need different teaching styles. It just depends on the learner. The drop-in tutoring program is really unique because students can work with different teachers. So maybe one teacher's background, right? They're coming from many different walks of life, our volunteers. So that's one thing we stress is we want volunteers coming. You know, if you're a person that worked in a bank before, if you're a person that worked in sales before, you have things to bring to the table for all of our learners. And so we can have learners working with different volunteers to get the most out of their learning experience, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, yeah. You're right, needs and what somebody can bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose you have situations where this didn't quite work out. You know, it's nothing against either party. It just
exactly.
isn't the right mix.
Exactly, and that's why the next time that they come in, we can match them with a different person. So it works out for everyone.
No, it sounds perfect. When you're going about the community, Cheryl, and trying to explain the position of the Literacy Council, for instance, I used to work for Gateway Technical College before I retired, and they have English language learners, they have GED programs, and I know you're not really in competition, you're partnering. Can you explain relationship with that type of learning organization, UW-Parkside, whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. So we work closely with those organizations in the community to help our students transition to their programs. And we, with Gateway Technical College in particular, we share a lot of students in the ELL program. And as students who are working on their GED are, you know, become more prepared for the classes and things at Gateway, we can help them transition. So we're really working on building kind of the basic foundation for our learners. And we're working with students who are at a fifth grade reading level or below and trying to kind of build their skills so that they feel confident and ready to be studying for their GED. And for the ELL students, we can offer them some different unique opportunities that are outside of what they would experience in their ELL classes at Gateway. So it's really great when students can participate in both programs because we do have some opportunity for more one-on-one or small group work, which they might not get in a larger traditional class. And we also have, you know, like the civics program and family literacy activities and field trips and things So we're able to provide those experiences, but then when they're in their classroom at Gateway, they really get that traditional kind of classroom experience, which is also important. So the students that participate in both of those programs really skyrocket. But we work with our students to know that the Literacy Council is a stepping stone. So this is not something, we don't want you to be a student at the Literacy Council forever. We want you to be a student at the Literacy Council for as long as you need to reach that next goal. So right from their very first appointment, when they're registering, we're talking about what is your goal? Why are you here? What do you want to do? And how can we get you there? And so we're really always kind of focused on that goal and how to get them to the next step. And we work with them to know that you're going to leave here. We want you to leave here and go on to the next bigger, better thing. And we're always going to be here to support you, but go out and find your dreams, and we're going to help you get there.
And I think that was one of the questions I had, too, and that's about changing goals. Sometimes you get into the program, and your goal might be right here, you know, at a fairly low level because you think, man, if I could even just get to that, life is going to be so much better. But then you get there, or mm-hmm. you get involved in the programs, and you see people who are excelling beyond that. Do you see people who keep on growing with the program, so to speak?
Absolutely, and I think I'll let Cassie talk about that a little bit. But I think one of the biggest things is when the students come in, they come in with huge goals, right? They come in with, I want to go to college, but I read at a first grade reading level. Okay, we're going to get you there, but what do we need to do first? And so I think the biggest thing that Cassie always asks is why? Why do you want to learn English? Why do you want to learn to read now? Because their answers to those questions can help her start to develop some shorter-term goals for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so when being in education, I think a lot of educators know that you have to break down that big goal into short-term goals. And so right from the get-go, I explain, well, learning English is a long-term goal, and let's think about all the different places that we use English, and we can kind of narrow that down to what is the most important thing for me right now. And I always tell the learners we work on that for about 3 months, and then we reevaluate that goal in an appointment, and that also goes along with an assessment of some sort. So we do a couple of things to help them attain their goals. One is personal goal setting, and then the other thing is assessing students when they complete a level in a book, making sure that they know that that's a big accomplishment for them so that they can see that they've come, you know, far. And we also do standardized testing in conversation skills so that we can compare where they were when they started to where they are now. So that's helping them kind of build their confidence and let them see that they can do it. And some of the successes that we've seen are students, like Cheryl said, that come to both the Literacy Council and go to Gateway. They really do skyrocket. Just a success story that I'll share is a student named Marilyn, and she was attending both classes. When she first attended my class, she did not speak any English to me. she knew some English, but she was so nervous about speaking English mm-hmm. and was so intimidated by other classmates and things like that. Her growth was very fun to see because she started to become an advocate for the Literacy Council as well as Gateway. So she has now started a job working at Gateway's Multicultural Center. Mm-hmm. So she is able to help students who were once in her position and help them grow. So she's going to classes at Gateway now so that she can... She's in her gen ed, so she's kind of making up her mind about what she wants to do.
Sure.
But she's come a long way.
That's got to be an amazing feeling to just see people's lives open up.
Yes.
I don't want to flip this to the dark side, but I think it's worth talking about. And not everybody is going to be successful. What generally are the reasons for that? Do you see people who just disappear?
So I think, right, it's with it's like anything with life. We start off with great intentions. I always compare it to going to the gym, right? That New Year's resolution comes and you're like, all right, this is my time. I'm going to do it. I'm going 3 days a week. I'm ready. Our students come in the same way. They set that resolution. This is my time. I need to learn to read. I need to learn English. And so they come in, they're ready to go. And then a kid gets sick at home, or then they work overtime, or then, you know, life gets in the way because they're all very busy adults and they have jobs and families at home. And so sometimes life just has to get in the way. Sometimes something else has to take priority. And so we just try to keep open communication with the students so that they know that they can always come back. Even if they have to take a break and step away from classes, we're there for them and ready for them to come back. And for some students, that happens multiple times. And you know, maybe they need to kind of make their start a few times before they get that success. But we're there for them and ready to help them when they are ready. And we also work with them to make sure that they have kind of the resources in the community that they need. So we have a literacy advocate that helps them. So if our students have needs outside of the Literacy Council, if they have, you know, oh my gosh, I don't know how I'm going to pay my rent, or my car is broken, or I don't know how to get to class, I don't have transportation to get to class, how can we help them work through those things so that their basic needs are met so that they can focus on education?
So who do they talk with? When you said a literacy advocate?
Yeah.
That I hadn't heard before.
Yeah. So it's we call it a literacy advocate. Right now it's that part-time instructor position.
Okay.
She helps with those responsibilities. But really it's just so the students know that they have somebody that they can reach out to when they need help with kind of access to community resources.
Okay. Yeah, because again, having a background with Gateway, that tends to be the problem here, too. It's those short-term crises that just blow you out of the water. And it is good to have that person to reach out to. It sounds great. Tell me a little bit about the interaction between the students. You know, you've got students from a lot of different countries at a lot of different levels. And I know the night, again, that I had come in, the one night that I saw everybody in action, they're in a fairly small room, but they're with a lot of different tutors and a lot of different groups. Do they interact with each other? Do they learn from each other?
Yeah, that's something that we work really hard to do, is to build relationships within our student population and our volunteer people as well. One of the small things we might do, or that we do is we have break time every class, and it's a mandatory break. it's a couple of reasons. You just have to give your brain a break, one. and number two, it's a good time for students to interact with each other and for volunteers to interact with each other at the Literacy Council. Like Cheryl said, it's kind of like that gym idea, right? If you create a relationship with somebody at the Literacy Council that's going through some of the same things you're going through, you're more likely to stick with it. So even if something does come up, like a job change or a transportation issue, you know, that student now has another student to contact, right? So if their car breaks down, they can call that other student and say, hey, I need a ride to class this time. And that way their learning doesn't necessarily have to stop. Unless it's a really major life change.
So you do see that. You see them forming those relationships.
Absolutely. And it's something that we try to encourage. So we know that kind of research about adult learners shows that, and for the students to persist and kind of reach their goals, that's one of the things that needs to happen, is they need to build that sense of community. And so we try to intentionally do things in our programming to encourage that sense of community and for the students to make those connections with other students and with the volunteers, so that they get to know each other and make friends and learn from each other and can depend on each other. I think that's a really important part of them being successful. And it's also really amazing for the students to hear them talk about it. I wish we had a student here for you to hear from. To hear them talk about what a great experience it is for them to be in a class where there's maybe eight of them and they're all from a different country.
Oh, wow.
And they get to learn through those discussions that they, you know, we have so much more in common than we have differences. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just a really great experience for them to see that too.
What do you think the Literacy Council experience does in terms of their opinion, comfort, enjoyment of coming to the United States to live.
I hope that it makes it so much better. I hope that it helps them to be more comfortable in our community and more confident to kind of interact with people in the community. I hope that it kind of opens their experiences and they get to have new experiences and learn new things. And so I think, you know, the feedback that we hear from students certainly is that it's been a great opportunity for them to come and learn and feel comfortable and safe, a good safe place for them to come and learn and kind of take the risks that go along with learning something new, but also to be a part of a community and to make some friendships. For some of them, it's a really scary thing to take on, to come someplace where they don't know anywhere. You know, sometimes many of our students don't know anyone but their immediate family, right? Mm-hmm. So they're in this community where they know no one else. So even, you know, to come and be able to make some friends and to have a place where you feel comfortable is huge.
Mm-hmm. And to be, you know, part of activities. I know I had seen you folks at the Kenosha Civic Veterans Parade, mm-hmm. and you had people on the float who were your students. That must have been a kind of a thrill or a weird thing, whichever, I don't know, for them to be going down the streets of Kenosha to really feel kind of special in the community, I would think.
Yeah, they love to participate in things like that. As the Literacy Council, we like to get involved in those things. And it goes back to that idea of making sure they feel a part of the community, know that they are a part of the community, and be involved in things like that. So for them to be able to be on that parade float and kind of represent the Literacy Council is a way for them to help the school that they're a part of grow and just be a part of it. So
there were a lot of proud faces, I noticed.
Yes.
Heartwarming. What's your biggest challenge over there?
The biggest challenge for any nonprofit is always funding, right?
Right.
So we do a lot of great things, and there are many more great things that we want to do in the future and more students that we could serve. And so in order to do that, we need funding. And so I think that's always our biggest challenge, the biggest thing that we're always working on.
You mentioned grants. What type of grants? I mean, you don't have to list every one,
sure.
But just to give us some ideas.
Yeah. So I think a couple of the biggest ones that are, you know, have an impact on us, and we're a United Way partner agency, so we have a United Way grant.
Does that support a specific part of the programming, or
it supports our programming in
overall.
General? So
okay.
The literacy programming in general. We also are a CDBG recipient, and so we receive money from the city
block
grants.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. And then we have a lot of smaller grants from foundations and things like that, the Rotary Foundation and other community organizations like that maybe are working on specific programs or projects. Also the Kenosha Community Foundation and some of their donor advised funds that they have. We have grants through those as well.
And, of course, which we mentioned earlier, is your Spelling Bee, which is the big fundraiser, mm-hmm. and that is coming up on April 5th at the Stella.
Yes.
Get to be one of the first people to go inside. And they should just come to your website if they wanted to order tickets, correct?
Yep, that's absolutely right. They can go to KenoshaLit.org, and they'll find all the information about the Spelling Bee there. They can also find us on Facebook. So if people are active on Facebook or Instagram, you can find us there, and all of the Spelling Bee information is posted there. They can come to the Literacy Council. We're located inside of the Uptown Library, so you can come visit us, and we'll sell you tickets right on the spot. We have posters you can put up. You can give us a call, and we can get you more information that way, too.
Perfect. Well, I'd like to thank you for joining us today. We've been talking with Cheryl Hernandez, Executive Director, Cassie Christensen, who is a Program Coordinator, and Brandy Cummings, who is a Board Member of the Kenosha Literacy Council. And I'm Jane Herring for Community Matters.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support for classical music on WGTD comes from Piasecki Althaus Funeral Home. The staff at Piasecki Althaus can answer your questions about pre-planning a meaningful funeral or tribute service. Piasecki Althaus, honoring and serving families in our community since 1931.
Support comes from Kenosha Winter Harbor Market, featuring longtime market vendor Pedro's Food. Choose from tacos, tamales, enchiladas, rice, and more. Eat it there or take it with you. Winter Market is open in the Rhodey Saturdays from 10 until 2.
Support for WGTD comes from Hupie and Abraham. In a moment, it's all gone. Your job, your car, your entire future. When you are seriously injured in an accident, visit a law firm with experience.